I am not a good dancer. Well, at least that's the opinion of my numerous nieces and nephews. If I really want to agitate them, I will dance in public when they're around, and I do so every chance I get. A year or so ago, Brenda and I enrolled in dance classes because we thought it might be fun. And because our friends Sherry and Brandy encouraged us to. Now you should see those two dance. They're really, really good. Brent and I, well, let's just say that we donated our last two dance lessons to Sherry and Brandy. We were done. It's a safe bet to say that dancing is not one of my gifts. Nor is fishing, by the way. My oldest nephews, Jim Doug and Jordan, love to fish. And Jim Doug was very good. He could almost catch them with his bare hands. When I take them fishing, when they were little boys, they would try to sneak around the pond and put one of their fish on my pole so I wouldn't get discouraged. This morning in our scripture passage, we meet some other really good fishermen. You might remember that last week we skipped over into John's gospel for just a week, and we talked about John's version of Jesus' call of the first disciples. Now we're back in Matthew, and this morning Harris read Matthew's version of the same call. Again, I think it's important for us to note that the versions of John and Matthew differ, not necessarily contradicting one another, but Matthew gives his own spin, and certainly the details are a bit different. The calling of the disciples, in fact, is an episode that varies a good bit in all four of the gospel writers, with variations in what leads up to the call and what order the disciples are called and which disciples are mentioned. But let's look at Matthew and see what we might learn. Our lectionary reading is really two separate stories. Verses 12 through 16 give us some setup. John the Baptist, who we know is the one that baptized Jesus, has been arrested. Now, our scripture doesn't say why, but most assume that he's been arrested because he is preaching messages that are contrary to the political authorities' demands. What Matthew does tell us is that when Jesus hears of this imprisonment, he withdrew. But it doesn't say why. There are a lot of assumptions we can make here, is there not? Maybe he was afraid. Maybe Jesus was sad. Maybe he was even more determined. Maybe he had to get away to gather his thoughts, for he must have been thinking, hey, they arrested John. I must be next. Jesus withdraws a bit. Matthew doesn't say how long. But Jesus comes back, it seems, with energy to make a difference in the world because he knew that that was his call. As we move into verse 15, the writer of Matthew does what he does a lot. He connects Jesus to the prophet Isaiah, a connection that the Jewish community would recognize. So Matthew quotes Isaiah's prophecy, promising that eventually those who are oppressed will be released, those in darkness will see light, those tossed aside would find hope. And for Matthew, the release, the light, and the hope was fulfilled in the life and ministry of Jesus. After this initial setup, Matthew moves into Jesus' ministry, and right off the bat, Jesus begins to ask people for help. That's a wake-up call for me. Jesus needed help, so who am I to think that I don't? Jesus didn't wave a magic wand to create change in the world. He didn't only rely on his great preaching or miracles or healings to persuade folks to consider a different way of life. He recognized that he needed some help, and then he went about finding it. And that we'll preach. First, he approached two fishermen brothers, Andrew and Simon, called Peter. Now remember last week in John's gospel had Jesus renamed Simon Peter, but Matthew doesn't add that detail. Matthew just simply has these two brothers fishing, which was their livelihood, and Jesus walks by and makes a strange statement. Follow me, and I will make you fish for people. How odd. First of all, there's no indication that they even knew who Jesus was. Second, their whole lives depended on a successful catch. It's how they not only fed their own families, but how they made their living. Then this guy comes along and tells them to leave their jobs and fish for people. What a weirdo. We might think they would at least roll their eyes or perhaps grumble to one another. Who is this guy, and what in the world does he mean that we will fish for people? I mean, really? We've got to understand that we know who Jesus is, but in these stories, these folks did not. The story continues, and what we read next is something surprising. Well, at least it is to me. For the scripture reads, immediately they left their nets and followed him. Immediately. No discussion, no exit strategy from leaving their jobs, no chats with their wives or family on how it might impact them. Immediately they followed. Wow. They must have felt something with this call from Jesus, for it was a very drastic move. As the story continues, we find that Andrew and Simon Peter weren't the only good fishermen on Jesus' journey. He came upon two more brothers, James and John, who were in the boat with their father, mending their fishing nets. This scene would indicate again that James, John, and their dad Zebedee were fishermen by trade. And with this story, Matthew ups the ante. Because Jesus did the same thing. He called them. Now, we're not sure what he said, for those details are left out. I don't know. Maybe he used the same line as he did with Andrew and Peter, since it obviously seemed to be a good sales pitch and worked. But whatever he said to John and James, not only did they leave the boat immediately, but the text is careful to point out that they also left their father to follow Jesus. Now, this isn't just some text to fill a page. Matthew is very intentional here. In the ancient community, a father was revered and respected. It was a very patriarchal society, and a father passed down to his sons, his land, his livestock, and his job trade. It would have been very unusual for not one, but two sons to walk away from their jobs, but more importantly here, their father, which is intended to point out that they left everything, including their families, to follow the call that they heard from Jesus. Okay, so first off, Jesus used an odd sales pitch. And then he has two sets of brothers who not only bite, no pun intended, but also leave everything to follow his call. Andrew, Peter, James, and John left their livelihoods, their families, their friends, everything to follow God's call. And it doesn't seem that they were bad fishermen. They apparently were pretty good, since it was their trade. It occurs to me then that Jesus asked them to leave what they knew best, to do something they had no idea about, fish for people. I am really not good at dancing. But I'm blessed with a pretty good ear for music. I've had many years of enjoyment in playing piano and guitar by ear and doing some amateur songwriting and singing. But you know, I know some really good dancers who can't sing too well. I don't know, Brandon and Sherry, if you all sing or not. And yet, what I think this story is about is discerning God's call for our life, aside from what we do best. It's about having the guts or the will, and maybe a little bit of both, to first open our ears and then step into God's plan for our lives, even when it doesn't make any sense and it's not what we do best. Jesus didn't just call the disciples to follow. He called them to do something different with their life. He called them away from their comfort zones, from their business success, from their natural talents, and he asked them to follow. They did not have a clue what they were going to be asked to do. And because we know how the story unfolds with Jesus' life, we can look at them and ask, maybe they should have asked a few more questions. But they didn't. These fishermen didn't pause to think. They didn't consult their families. They didn't check their bank balances. They followed. Period. Friends, this was a radical call and a radical response. And frankly, more times than not, I'm not sure I'm up to that task. So here we are this morning, gathered as a community of faith, each of us unique, and God needs us too. Not just when it's convenient, not just for things we're good at. God might be calling us to uncharted waters. I like how Roger Nishoka summarizes the response of Andrew, Peter, James, and John. And I quote, "It would seem that these four who were already in a worthy vocation had restless hearts. So restless that when they heard Jesus call to them, they could do nothing else but leave everything behind and follow. Perhaps they were simply responding to what had already been imprinted on their souls from birth. The knowledge of the voice of God. So when they heard the voice, all they could do was follow." How is your heart this morning? How's your heart? Are you where you're supposed to be in terms of answering God's call for your life? There are a lot of competing voices that call us. And it can be complicated to discern God's voice. One way to do this is to examine the person behind the voice to see if it's consistent with the God who's revealed to us in Scripture and through our experience. God might be asking me to dance, or you to sing, or something else that either of us might not be familiar with or comfortable doing. Yet God calls us out of ourselves and what we think we can do or what we think we can be and into all God knows we can be. Indeed, to all we are created to be. Last week in John's Gospel, Jesus said, "Come and see." And today in Matthew's version, Jesus says, "Follow me." God has called us, and not just by name, but to a special purpose. When we find and claim our own vocation, that which fulfills us and creates good in the world, we are freed from the bonds of what others expect from us or claimed for us. And none of us are exempt from the calling of God, which is ongoing. You may be retired. Well then, what is God calling you to do now with all your wisdom? You may be differently abled. How might God use your experience with living with some restrictions to give witness to others? You may be unsure of what vocation to claim. When's the last time you opened yourself to God's possibilities for your life? Vocation is more than what we do. It is about, at its core, who we are. Discipleship comes in many and sometimes unlikely forms. William Perkey is credited with a saying that I'm sure many of you have heard before. Dance like no one is watching. Love like you'll never be hurt. Sing like no one is listening. Live like it's heaven on earth. Sounds pretty similar to Jesus, who called the disciples and indeed calls us. Come and see. Follow me to dance, to sing, to love, to live. Follow me, even when, no, especially when you don't think you can. Immediately, they followed. Maybe somehow, some way, we might do likewise.